Hey guys, it's Steve Baker, sometimes known as the Pragmatic Constitutionalist. I wanted to take a few minutes today and actually read through the article that I wrote entitled An Overview of the Buffalo Shooters Manifesto. And the reason for that is very simply, anytime I write an article of that length, we are up against the TLDR crowd, the too long didn't read people who will either just scan through it or ignore it completely because it's more than the length of the content of a meme. Unfortunately, that's the world we live in, so that's why we have to do these podcasts now in order to do that. But in addition to just reading that, I'm going to offer additional commentary along the way. I'm going to take a little bit more time with it than just a rote read through. So I'll start off by saying when I woke up this morning, this is Wednesday, May 18th, one of the first things that I got notified from Facebook was that I had received another suspension on my Facebook accounts because of this very article. They actually said that it was a violation of community standards because I was promoting violent and terroristic activities in the article. Well, if you haven't read it yet, you're going to quickly learn that I did no such thing. If you have read the article, you know that I did not. And of course, I took what many are considering, and one of the most rewarding things that I've been hearing back from the feedback and the comment threads is that this is considered by many to be the most balanced overview of this whole particular incident that anybody has read and from any media source. And obviously, I enjoy that pat on the back. It makes me feel good. But also, we get the counter strike when I do, in fact, hit my stride, and when I kind of nail it, or somebody said I knocked it out of the park. When that happens, the opposite is also taking place. Those articles typically that are most highly praised also get the biggest number of troll attacks on the articles, particularly, you know, on Facebook, because that's where our largest audience still exists. And they came out. They came out with knives and F-bombs and everything else blazing. And my readers know that I don't block people. I don't delete comments of people that are by people that disagree with me. I am absolutely fully open to engaging in respectful discourse and debate. And I don't care how vehemently they disagree with me. I don't delete them or block them or delete their comments. I only block and delete when they either come out of the chutes or they devolve into, the F you, you're an idiot kind of things, and then they're gone. It's no more complicated than that for me. So this morning I had to scroll through and I had to take care of a few of those trolls because that particular article in that particular comment thread was getting an inordinately large number of those types of responses. And I could spend a lot of time on who they are because I do track them down and I do know who they are. And it's sad. It's surprising. It's actually not Democratic Party operatives. It's actually leftist libertarians who are still mad at me for changing the name from the Pragmatic Libertarian to the Pragmatic Constitutionalist as my branding back here 2 years ago and the ongoing fallout from that. And so when I do click on their names and I click on their links and I go to their about who they are on their Facebook pages, I find out that they're associated with, you know, various types of libertarian organizations and groups. And interestingly, usually when they're also associated with Antifa pages as well, which is kind of interesting. And I could do a whole podcast series on that. In fact, well, basically I did an entire story on that because that's why I left the name The Pragmatic Libertarian behind 2 years ago, was to distance myself from those elements of that philosophy and distance myself from those elements of the party that still exists, of the Libertarian Party, even though I'd never been a member of that party. The association was just too close and too big of a burden for me to bear at that point. And I did not abandon my own libertarianism. In fact, I think that I'm probably stronger and more true to it than I've ever been. It's just that the circumstances that we're dealing with right now in the real world require much more pragmatic solutions sometimes than what a purist libertarian might require, see, or expect from either leaders, politicians, bureaucrats, or editorial journalists like myself. So I was getting a pretty hardline attack this last 24 hours after publishing that article. And I went in and made some deletions and some blocks of those that were just dropping the F-bombs and generally behaving poorly. And then within minutes, I received a suspension notice from Facebook that they were going to suspend me for 3 more days and that and all the other list of things that they normally do. And there's usually a laundry list of 3 or 4 or 5 other things that they add onto those suspensions, particularly because of my history of being suspended for my commentary. And what ended up happening is, you know, besides just being pissed off and mad and stomping around for a little bit, you know, and just deciding that it was not even worth it to go through an appeal because I never am successful with an appeal. In fact, the very, very few times that they even respond with the appeal, they'll even double down on my penalties because I'll get into it with them. And so I kind of half decided not to appeal and then, I'll do it. So I did. And unbelievably, for the first time ever in my relationship with Facebook, in 4 minutes, they sent me over an apology and a reversal of the deletion of the article and of my suspension of my accounts, and I was back up and running in 4 minutes. Unbelievable. 4 minutes of the actual appeal, they actually responded, actually apologized, and made it all right. So I am going to now go ahead and go through this article. It's the one that received the suspension, but is back up. And it's called An Overview of the Buffalo Shooter's Manifesto. I published that yesterday on all the social media platforms that we are on, including Locals, Facebook, Twitter, Gab, MeWe, Parler. I think that's all of them. And then I'm going to add some additional commentary to this as well. So this was published yesterday on May 17th, 2022. All right, I'm just going to start from the beginning, and I'll just stop randomly as I feel like I can add something to it, because certainly after all of the comments and questions and things that are people, the way people have responded, it's given me fodder for response. So here we go. Unlike 99.9%+ of the populace, 99% of those editorializing, and probably 100% of politicians running their mouths, I actually read the entirety of the Buffalo Shooter's 180-page manifesto, rather than just the randomly selected quotes used by media sources from whatever tribal bubble they attend. Taking into account the totality of the manifesto, there's plenty of material from which both the right and the left can cherry-pick for their purposes, but on the whole, the picture of who and what he is quite clear. Now, sideline commentary, you may have noticed that in the three or four articles that I've already written about the Buffalo incident here, is that I have not named the shooter, nor have I posted a picture of him, and that's pretty much my policy going forward with all of these types of events. I certainly am going to comment on the comments and comment on the other editorializations that are out there, particularly the ones that are just dead wrong, and which is what spurred this review as well. But the bottom line is that I'm not going to give the publicity directly to the perpetrators of these crimes. Continuing on with the article. The 18-year-old kid really, really hates Jews and anything or anyone who has ever had favorable relationships with Jews. Basically, every bad thing ever originates from the Jews, but he believes the Jews can be dealt with later, after first purging Europe and America of black and brown peoples. As to Asians, he shows some tolerance and respect for their intelligence. As to those blacks and browns, he is okay with them actually existing on this planet so long as they return or remain in the lands of their origin. His personal motive for targeting them for death on Saturday and for encouraging others of his mindset to take up arms against them is to scare them back to the lands of their origin. While there are plenty of his thoughts from which those on both the American left and right can cherry pick for editorial purposes, there is no doubt that his overall political values are squarely on the left side of any political graph or equation. Much more on that later. The prevailing argument that the shooter is a right-wing Republican extremist, from left-leaning news sources, comes from his presentation and obsession with ethnic, cultural, and racial replacement theory of white European bloodlines through mass immigration and reproduction disparities. He argues that whites are simply not having as many babies as are the more disfavored races. Now, technically, he's absolutely correct in terms of the numbers, not in who is favored or disfavored, obviously. That left-leaning news sources are assigning the idea of replacement theory as a racially oriented cause of the American right, you know, the MAGA, conservatives, Republicans, etc., is not surprising, as they assign anything with which the right disagrees with them first as racist. Then, closely followed behind that, is the only other possible alternatives of what someone who disagrees with the left can possibly be, would be sexist, homophobic, transphobic, etc., etc. Never do they actually discuss policy differences, you know, the kind of things that could be rationally debated. While Tucker Carlson is never once mentioned in the manifesto, the left's commentary has universally claimed the shooter's motivations and indoctrination is a direct result of Carlson's mentions of unrestricted immigration policy being a conspiracy of the left to replace Republican voters with those more likely and traditionally inclined to vote for Democrats. Well, interestingly, I know of not a single grassroots or mainstream GOP leader who is not currently encouraged by the inherent conservatism of so many of those now coming to America who are escaping, especially from the socialist and communist countries of like Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, etc. And the polls now showing a growing support among Hispanics for GOP candidates, not to mention the increasing number of black voters now leaving the quote-unquote Democratic plantation after over 60 years of Democratic policy stronghold over their major cities, where crime and income inequality and such continues to rise precipitously. Further, any rational observation of the American melting pot reveals this continent is going to be mostly brown. And by the end of this century, as more and more interracial marriages and partnerships are producing mixed race offspring, and not solely because of immigration policies, every person with whom I have personal, business, or political relationship, and that's a very, very large number, and this includes people from the left, the right, and all the others, have no issues with interracial, intercultural, interreligious, or otherwise mixed relationships of any kind. And don't forget that one of the right's most powerful arguments against abortion is that Planned Parenthood's founder, Margaret Sanger, was outspoken in her desire to purge the nation of non-whites by means of her abortion agenda. The mainstream American right is simply not looking at replacement theory from a racist context. Now, this is where I want to talk a little bit more about this replacement theory thing. I've seen leftist editorials saying that Tucker Carlson himself has somewhere in the vicinity of 300 or 400 times advocated or mentioned or talked about the replacement theory or the grand replacement theory or the great replacement theory idea, which basically in its simplicity says, or the accusation is, and this is certainly the thoughts of the Buffalo shooter, is that the replacement theory is simply this: the more of the black and browns that are other races that come into the United States or into Europe that immigrate are then not only replacing the whites, but they're out producing them through childbirth, reproduction, at an alarmingly high number, and that this replacement theory is something that has to be fought about or fought against from a white supremacist viewpoint. Whereas I have never, not one single time in my life, ever heard a GOP leader of any type advocate that this is something that we need to be working against, or that the party itself need to be working against, or that America needs to be working against, or that white people need to be working against. What I have heard, and what I have heard from many, is the discussion of the replacement theory as it relates to the electoral system. In other words, the idea, and it's one that I subscribe to, is that the Democratic Party openly, when I say Democratic Party, let's just further clarify that I mean progressives, and the progressives are deeply entrenched in the Republican Party as well. But the bottom line is that those of that mindset who want to change America, we're not talking about a racial change, we're talking about an electoral change, is allowing people from groups that might be of a different skin color, who in fact are coming across illegally, they're being allowed in, they're being given a welfare, social security cards, driver's licenses, the agenda is fully in play to give them the right to vote even as non-citizens. And the bottom line is that there is in fact a conspiracy of the left, of the progressive left, to replace those who would normally vote on the right side of issues and predominantly with more conservative or Republican ideals, with those who traditionally are going to vote for Democrats. And that's the bottom line. But that's changing, and that's the point that I made here in the article, is that there are so many evidences now of Hispanics pulling out of their loyalty to the Democratic Party. And then, of course, we're seeing an ever larger and ever-increasing number of black voters who are leaving the Democratic plantation as well and are becoming conservative. They're becoming red-pilled. And that's the reality of the numbers that are taking place right now. So when you hear this accusation that Tucker Carlson and other right-wing mainstream GOP pundits, blah, 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 are promoting and advocating for replacement theory, they're not doing so on a racial basis. And as I said in this article, the genie's out of the bottle. It's not going to be put back in. For one thing, there is no agenda to do so. Secondly, there is just the raw, simple, biological aspect of America being the greatest melting pot of any country on the planet, is that because we don't have that systemic cultural racism that we're accused of, that we have the largest and growing number of interracial relationships taking place that are making babies, that are engaging in reproductive activities, and they're creating mixed race and browner babies. So this is just where this continent is headed. This is where this country is headed. We are headed towards, even without, if we stopped immigration today, and we secured the southern border, we locked it down, and there's nobody going across. If that happened today, 100 years from now, this is going to be a brown continent. It's okay. That's fine. I'm a mutt myself. I mean, I've got more, I look white, but I have an incredibly large percentage of Seminole, Choctaw, Apache, and black blood inside of me. Black being the smaller of the percentage, obviously. But it's just a product of me growing up in Louisiana and my ancestors being from South Louisiana and the Cajun mix and the Creole mix and the mixture of all of the Native Americans that were in that gene pool. And my mother's bloodline came out white, and my dad's bloodline was a mixture of German and Seminole Indian. And they were predominantly white. But when I do get a suntan, a dark suntan, it has a very reddish tint, so you can see it manifest itself in my actual genetic heritage. We just don't have this concept or this ideal of racial replacement theory that needs to be reversed and ejected from this country like this particular shooter has in his manifesto. But we are aware of the agenda of the electoral replacement activities that are taking place purposefully by the progressive left. So I'm back into my own article. we can find extremists from both the left and right with deep-seated racist writings, motivations, and agendas. But in both cases, they represent the smallest fraction of the left-right paradigm. An interesting sideline takeaway from the Shooter's Manifesto is his utter contempt for libertarians and individualists. Obviously, because libertarians have always been the most tolerant of all American political ideologies. As a matter of fact, we were pro-gay marriage 50 years before even Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama famously flip-flopped on that issue. As you will recall, and I'm taking a departure from the article here for a second. As many of you will recall, with both of those individuals, Clinton and Obama, they, in their initial original campaigns, were in fact on the record very specifically stated that marriage was only between a man and a woman, period. Obama got elected and he signed the gay marriage bill into law. So, I mean, but the thing is that everybody that was following Obama, everybody that was voting for Obama, knew that he was lying through his teeth when he was saying that to begin with. The same thing was true with Hillary Clinton when she was manifestly and adamantly saying this exact same thing, that the only true marriage could be between a man and a woman. Everybody knew she was lying, and she reversed course later on herself. But the libertarians were way ahead of them. So I go back to the article. Of course, in the Shooter's mind, libertarians can't be trusted because so many of our most renowned thinkers were of Jewish descent. That includes Ayn Rand, Rothbard, Milton Friedman, Mises. In his manifesto, the Shooter derides a society of rampant nihilism, consumerism, and individualism, where every individual is a competitor and the rights of the individual override all notions of responsibility. That's a quote from him, so that's hardly right-wing ideology. And he continues, and I quote from the Buffalo Shooter, "In this hell, the individual is all and the race is worthless, something to rail against and use whenever possible, a power structure to climb or topple. The truth that they are left alone, an individual in a society worshiping the cult of the individual, to respond against an influx of outsiders from all corners of the world." Using the phrase, and I quote, "the cult of the individual" comes right out of the leftist and Marxist handbook. Hardly, as I said before, right-wing ideology, certainly not mainstream GOP ideology. Back to the article. Another hang-up of leftist commentary on this Shooter's political philosophy is his self-identification as a fascist, a Nazi, and a National Socialist, which they mistakenly or purposefully claim to be core values of the American right. Frankly, those who actually believe that are either wantonly ignorant, flat out stupid, or deliberately using disinformation in their effort to keep their own readers ignorant of the actual definitions and historical context of each. The old European definition of National Socialism was considered right wing because it was only slightly right of communism, but squarely still a leftist ideology in practice. Nationalization and centralized control of industry, the oppression of non-whites, Jews and other ethnic groups, and homosexuals being the practice of both fascists and communists alike. Fascism and National Socialism being only one notch right of Marxist, Leninist, Stalinist communism, but hardly right-wing. If you just use the word fascist or Nazi or whatever in its proper context online, you're going to get castigated by the people that still believe that those are right-wing designations when they are anything but of the sort. I continue. The Shooter spends many pages using the method of asking himself who he is or what he believes. So here's a condensed portrayal of himself in his own words. I'm going to read through quite a few. I may interrupt for a commentary here and there, but when I say, "Are you a fascist?" this is him asking himself so that he can set himself up for the answer to the question. So here we go. "Are you a fascist?" "Yes. Fascism is one of the only political ideologies that will unite whites against the replacers. Since that is what I seek, calling me a fascist would be accurate." "Are you a white supremacist?" Yes, I would call myself a white supremacist. After all, which race is responsible for the world we live in today? I believe the white race is superior in the brain to all other races. Are you a racist? Yes, I am racist because I believe in differences of capabilities between races. Are you intolerant? Sure. The last virtues of a dying nation are tolerance and apathy, and I want none of it. Are you an anti-Semite? Yes, he says in capital letters with exclamation points. I wish all Jews to hell. Go back to hell where you came from, demon. That's pretty clear. Are you a neo-Nazi? I support neo-Nazism, but I am not a member of any neo-Nazi groups. You decide what that makes me. Are you a conservative? No. Conservatism is corporatism in disguise. I want no part of it. Are you a homophobe or anti-LGBTQ? I believe that problems involving the LGB, drop the T, are very insignificant. If one is actually part of the LGB or LGB group and they are loyal to their people, that is fine with me. Transgenderism, however, is a mental illness and should be addressed as such. Are you right-wing? Depending on the definition, sure. Are you left-wing? Depending upon the definition, sure. Are you a socialist? Depending on the definition, worker ownership of the means of production? It depends on who those workers are, their intentions, who currently owns the means of production, their intentions, and who currently owns the state and their intentions. I'm departing from the narrative here for a second to just expound on this one a little bit throughout the context of his entire manifesto. He's this, that, or the other thing. He's left, he's right, he's conservative, he's liberal, he's a right-winger, he's a left-winger, he's a this or that or the other thing within the context so long as it adheres to the idea of the great replacement theory, which is the bottom line for him, is that America needs to be purged and Europe needs to be purged of all but Eurocentric white bloodlines, period. And so anything that conforms or helps him to, in his mind, his warped mind, to realize, or as he envisions that for the ultimate realization of America returning to being a white nation and Europe returning to be a white continent, then he's whatever he can cherry pick out of any ideology to make that happen in his mind. It's kind of no more complicated than that. Next question, I'm back into his narrative. He says, did you always hold these views? And his answer, when I was 12, I was deep into communist ideology. One wonders how a 12-year-old is deep into communist ideology. I haven't spent a lot of time studying about who his parents are, but I think that's kind of the next step, isn't it? Back to the narrative. When I was 12, I was deep into communist ideology. Talk to anyone from my old high school and ask about me, and you will hear that. From age 15 to 18, however, I consistently moved further to the right. On the political compass, I fall in the mild, moderate, authoritarian left category, and I would prefer to be called a populist. This requires a little bit of a commentary, I suppose, because as I previously pointed out, his move to the right only took him from what he described as being deep into communist ideology a little bit further to the right towards the mild, moderate, authoritarian left category, in his own words. When he says that I moved to the right, as I have described communism, National Socialism, it's just a notch, it's a notch further to the right, but it's squarely on the left. Next question he asks himself, what are your views? I would prefer to call myself a populist, but you can call me an ethno-nationalist, eco-fascist, National Socialist if you want. I wouldn't disagree with you. Why did you choose firearms? And he's talking about for the massacre in Buffalo. Why did you choose firearms? He says, because they work. The effect it would have on social discourse, the extra media coverage they would provide, and the changes to gun laws that will be pushed will all help my case. Then he asks himself, why did you choose, and then he puts the word redacted instead of Buffalo. He said, why did you choose redacted for the place of attack? Now, he explains later on that the reason why that he chose to redact the location and some of the details was because in case this was published before the attack, he did not want the police, law enforcement, FBI, such to be able to intervene. So he left out certain details of where he was going. And that's why he uses, that's why he redacted himself. Once again, why did you choose redacted for the place of attack? And he answers, redacted, or Buffalo, has the highest black population percentage of the zip code and isn't that far away. Plus, New York has heavy gun laws, so it would ease me if I knew that any legally armed civilian was limited to only 10-round magazines or cupped firearms. Attacking in a weapon-restricted area may decrease the chance of civilian backlash. Schools, courts, or areas where concealed carry laws are outlawed or prohibited may be good areas of attack. Areas where concealed weapons permits are low may also fit in this category. Areas with strict gun laws are also great places of attack. The AR-15 is readily accessible even in cucked New York, and after some modifications will be able to effectively kill. Plus, the media loves to hate on the AR-15, which may increase media coverage and public outlash. I really don't even need to offer any more commentary on that, do I? I mean, even at 18 years of age, even with a warped mind, he knows exactly where the gun-free zones in areas where civilians are least likely to be concealed carrying or otherwise are the best places to attack. Not a difficult equation. And it's why most of these attacks, 90%+ of them, take place in gun-free zones or in cities and counties that have the most restricted gun laws. He asks himself going forward, won't your attack result in calls for the removal of gun rights in the United States? He answers, yes, that is the plan all along. You said you would fight to protect your rights and the Constitution. Soon will come the time. Translated, what he's saying is that he expects that there expects to be such a political backlash against his attack and his use of an AR-15, yet again, to ban so-called assault rifles, that finally American patriots will rise up and begin taking out the opposition. That's what he wants. He basically lets the cat out of the bag here that he is really wanting to see a civil war. Now, when you read the entire context of the manifesto, you actually see him talk about that. Now, he's talking specifically about the white peoples eliminating the blacks and the browns, using firearms against them, killing them in mass, killing them at every opportunity, killing their leadership whenever possible, specifically to scare those races out of the European and American continents. That's his overall thing. I guess I did write a parenthetical commentary on that, so let me read that. The shooter believes the left's backlash against his own gun violence and mass killing will cause American gun owners to finally go to war against the invading replacement races. But this is hardly the intent or views of those who support the Second Amendment. Okay, back to him. He now doesn't ask a question, but he specifically addresses conservatives. And he says, ask yourself truly, what has modern conservatism managed to conserve? Nothing is conserved. The natural environment is industrialized, pulverized. Western culture is trivialized, pulped, and blended into a smear of meaningless nothing, with the only tenets and beliefs seemingly held to are the myth of the individual. There he goes attacking individualism again. The value of work, productivity for the benefit of your capitalist owners, and the sovereignty of private property to ensure none of us get grand ideas of taking the unearned wealth of our owners. Conservatism is dead. Thank God. Let us bury it and move on to something of worth. Again, this is hardly the thoughts of a mainstream conservative as purported by the mainstream media in many accounts, of, you know, particularly the Rolling Stone article. But now he addressed the leftists. And he says, I think leftism will always have great intentions, but as a result will slow progress down considerably or even reverse progress made. Modern leftism aims to create problems that don't actually exist. Can't disagree with him there. Like patriarchy and white supremacy. Teaching white children to hate themselves. No, whoa. Let's go back. Listen to what he said. Let's talk about leftism. He said, modern leftism aims to create problems that don't actually exist. like patriarchy and white supremacy. He's dead right. That's exactly what modern leftism spews every day. MSNBC, CNN, NPR, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on. And yet the numbers don't show that. As I've argued in this article and in previous articles, that we're talking about the white supremacists are the extreme fringe, and they exist on both the left and the right, but they are the extreme fringes of any political ideology, particularly in this country. And that can be said of other countries, but that is the way it is here. And he admits that modern leftism aims to create problems that don't actually exist, like patriarchy and white supremacy. In other words, what he's saying is the problem doesn't actually exist. He wants it to exist. He is calling upon people to take up. He's calling people that have just that slight, you know, maybe twinge of bitterness or racism. Maybe they lost their job to somebody through affirmative action or whatever. He's poking that, and he's sticking a needle in that idea, and he's trying to elicit that kind of response. And that is a huge overriding theme in this entire manifesto, is that he's calling people to action, and describes. He spends pages and pages and pages of ways of describing how to do so. I didn't get into any of that because that was really not the point of this particular article. But I do provide the link, and the link will be in the video link and the podcast link. So if you want to go read the entire 180-page manifesto, you can do so yourself, and you can verify what I'm saying. All right, back to what he was saying. Modern leftism aims to create problems that don't actually exist, like patriarchy and white supremacy. Teaching white children to hate themselves and their blood. Talking about modern leftism. He's nailing it there. Teaching non-whites to hate our people. Yeah. Teaching that it's okay for anyone to be anything, no matter the consequences. Yeah. Leftism only brings down our society. Yeah. Okay. Yet he still identifies as a mild to moderate authoritarian leftist. And then I said, parenthetically in the article, while throwing a quotable bone to the leftward media, he opens by again expressing sympathy with their intentions. And that was his first line. I think leftism will always have great intentions. He then proceeds to opine with more of his left-leaning visions of our future going forward. In big quotes, one line, he says, green nationalism is the only true nationalism. He continues, there is no green future. With never-ending population growth, the ideal green world cannot exist in a world of 100 billion, 50 billion, or even 10 billion people. In other words, he definitely believes in population control, population suppression, obviously cleaning the planet off of the unwanted masses. He goes on to say, if an ethnocentric European future is to be achieved, global free markets and the trade of goods is to be discouraged at all costs. In other words, there's nothing capitalistic, nothing conservative, nothing liberty-oriented about this particular statement right here. This is pure Marxism in the guise of white supremacy. Break its back any way you can, whether that is by encouraging and pushing increases to the minimum wage, hello, furthering the unionization of workers, hello, increasing the native birth rate and thereby reducing the need for the importation of labor, increasing the rights of workers. In the end, human greed and the need for increasing profit margin of capital owners needs to be fought against and broken. Again, I remind you of the title of that Rolling Stone article the day after the shooting, which in the headline identified the Buffalo shooter as a mainstream Republican. And this is by a writer who claims to have read the article. So if she did read the article, then she's a liar. If she didn't read the article, she just skimmed over it and she missed all of this, then she's incompetent. That Rolling Stone magazine itself, if they even have an ombudsman who reviewed it for accuracy and compared her commentary to the manifesto itself. And in fact, often when these articles are submitted to major magazines, the magazine's editors actually create the headlines themselves. She may not have written this headline. They may have written a headline that identified the shooter as a mainstream Republican, even though nothing that I'm reading to you here is even remotely in the mainstream of conservative thought or Republican thought or the middle of the American right-wing philosophies. And it wasn't just Rolling Stone, as we know. It was just, it's still being repeated over and over and over and over and over again, that he's a right-wing extremist, that he's a Republican extremist, and they continue to identify him as someone on, as being absolutely prototypical of the American right. And it's just not true, in his own words. So back to the shooter's own words. Civil war in the so-called melting pot that is the United States should be a major aim in overthrowing the global power structure and the West's egalitarian, individualist, globalist dominant culture. In the United States, perhaps more than anywhere else in the world, the cult of the individual has been practiced for the longest time and with the deepest devotion. Again, straight out attacks to individual liberty here in this particular screed. I begin my conclusion here of the article at this point. I'd be remiss if I did not add the undergirding tenure of each of his political positions, whether deemed from the left or the right, are first based in the goal of total white supremacy and the removal of all non-whites and Jews from both the United States and Europe. Apart from that foundational context, the American left-right paradigm means nothing to him. To that extent, any traditional conservative or leftist ideal he perceives beneficial in those aims are acceptable, and any he believes thwart the purity and supremacy of white European bloodlines are to be destroyed. This is why he takes the position of, and I quote, mild moderate authoritarian left on his, and I quote, political compass. It's because the iron fist of authoritarianism is required to implement his utopian white supremacy in the land, as well as to force the adoption of his ideal of centralized control of the means of production and labor. Authoritarianism is a must to implement his manifesto. I continue. Is he alone in his thoughts? A lone wolf? Certainly not. But his depraved mind, like others of his ilk, only exist on the outermost fringes of whatever political ideology you wish to make such an assignation. Contrary to what you are now hearing from either Rolling Stone, MSNBC, Senator Chuck Schumer, or the Twitter cesspool, he is anything but a mainstream Republican, or a mainstream Democrat for that matter. What we do know is that he was already a known threat to law enforcement, and therefore also to his own parents. On that basis, let's reasonably discuss and debate why he was allowed access to those weapons, and then hold those entities responsible for their failures. I'm referring to law enforcement and his parents as well. And then stop pointing fingers at each other, those of us on the left and the right, when absolutely no one I know, left, right, libertarian, or other, even remotely aligns with the views stated in the Buffalo Shooter's manifesto. That was the article that got me temporarily suspended from Facebook this morning and then immediately reinstated upon appeal. But there's not a whole lot more that needs to be added to this. I could describe the article or the manifesto at length. It's really the best way to read it if you want to take time, and you don't have to read the entire 180 pages. You can skim through it. The opening few pages are essential. The closing few pages, because that's really when he's describing his mindset and describing his philosophy and describing his intention, and also calling others to arms and describing the means whereby they can get that message out, his message of white supremacy out to the masses. So he goes into a lot of description about that. In the bulk, in the center of the 180 pages, is nothing but just, he identifies the problem groups. He identifies all of, he's got some statistics about, you know, racial disparity. He's got his hit list of Jews that he hates and organizations that are aligned with Jewish peoples or founded by Jews or endorsed by Jews or whatever the case may be. So he's got quite a lot going on there. He's got a lot of images, and he's a big fan of memes. So there's a lot of memes in there as well. Then, of course, then he gets into really, really detailed and boring descriptions about the types of weapons that he's used, why he does what he did, the modifications that he's made on the guns, the ammunition. He gets right down to the description even of the gloves he's wearing. So, I mean, and all of these are recommendations. And then he lists dozens of other options of other types of equipment and gear and that sort of thing that are acceptable or not acceptable. So there's a lot of fluff in this thing. Out of the 180 pages, if you do care to look at it, it's not as arduous as you might think. And the other thing that we're now learning too is that these are not necessarily his words. A lot of this is just cut copy and paste. I think someone has identified a lot of this was cut, copied, and pasted directly from the New Zealand shooter's manifesto and others as well. And I haven't taken the time to drill down on that. My primary motivation for writing what I did was to address the American mainstream leftist media's characterization as this guy being something right out of the heartland of America and being a mainstream right-wing conservative GOP Republican thinker. When obviously it's nothing of the sort. So that's why I did what I did, not to get into the peripheral details of how this thing came to be, when I say this thing, the manifesto itself, or how who actually wrote the words for him. He appears to be an intelligent kid of sorts, but intelligence does not negate insanity either. It certainly is an interesting thing to find out how a kid so young can be so corrupted so early. And as he said in his own words, by the time he was 12, he was deep into communism. Well, I can only assume, and I am making an assumption now, that comes from something in his own home, which led him down that path. And then in his teenage rebellious years, he moved to the right, which is actually still the left, as he self-describes, as a left-leaning authoritarian. I think we've made our point here. And I just wanted to say to anyone listening to this for the first time, I would like for you to join us wherever you can find my stuff. Obviously, we're on most of the larger social media sites. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are on Gab, MeWe, and Parler. But our home is Locals, and that is thepragmaticconstitutionalist.locals.com, thepragmaticconstitutionalist.locals.com. We do have our website is actually still up, but it's being reconstructed right now, so it's been static and nothing new has been added to the website of late. But talking to my developer just in the last few days, it's like we could literally throw the switch on right now, but we're just in there tweaking and fixing and doing some things to make sure it looks good, looks better, and is fully functional by the time we turn the lights on there. Everything though that we do now originates from Locals, and that is once again thepragmaticconstitutionalist.locals.com. It is free to subscribe there on a read only basis, but we also offer other exclusive content for our supporters there. And you can support TPC for as little as $5 a month, or you can do an annual subscription there for $50 and save $10 a year by doing it that way. And we would love to have you over there. And as a supporter, you not only are able to interact with our other members or other subscribers, you're able to interact directly with me. It is where I spend the most time interacting with my readership. And then in addition to that, we actually even own Locals, give you the right to publish and post your own content right there in our Locals community, the TPC, the Pragmatic Constitutionalist Locals community. You can publish your own thoughts, your own content. You can write your own articles and put it right there on my page and right there in our own community, just as a subscriber for only $5 a month. And that's a hell of a lot cheaper than building your own website, I will tell you. That's something I've never allowed on any of our other social media accounts or pages. And the obvious reason for that is that that's just inviting the trolls to come in and take over. And that's why I've set the paywall so low at only $5 a month, because that effectively does keep the trolls out. And I haven't had to delete or block anyone in Locals, and we've been there for about a year and a half now. As I mentioned at the very beginning of this podcast, I've had to do that a couple of times this morning because of the response to this particular article. These kinds of articles bring the trolls out. They want to stir things up. They want to create problems. And there's just not that problem, that issue over in Locals. And so as a result of that, I run the community as kind of a, you know, benevolent mayor of that town. And I pretty much allow anything to happen there so long as what you're saying and what you're doing is legal and obeys the rules and laws of the United States of America. You can post your own thoughts in there, even if I disagree with them. Even if we have a debate, literally a debate, that's fine. We've had those there in my locals community, but I've never had to block anybody or delete anybody. Not yet. So hopefully that continues. So that's it. All right. So thank you very much for joining me today. And let's get out of here and we'll do this again soon. All right. Take care. Once again, Steve Baker, the Pragmatic Constitutionalist. See you next time.